like pretty much any technical coding interview you have right, like that anyone has today, that you're going to have questions about around data structures and algorithms. And so this is like the foundation for like interviewing. And with this, it was more so, and I wouldn't even say syntax either, it was more so problem solving, just understanding the concepts. Because I find that it's like kind of like math. It's like when you're learning math, you have to, each concept builds on top of the other. So you have to have that solid foundation in order to actually learn and like apply new concepts. And so that's pretty much how I apply with coding. The syntax isn't too difficult. It's like the more you do it, the more, well, at least personally for me, the more I do it, the more I become familiar with it and I feel more comfortable. But it's just, for me, I just see the code and the syntax and all of that as a means to solving the problem.
The champ is here! The champ is here! The champ is here!
Hey, 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 welcome back. Season 3. Man, I'm excited. Got some special guests coming up. Got some awesome stories coming up. And got some fantastic lessons coming up. Really appreciate everyone joining me along this journey. And without further ado, here we go.
Hello, family. Hope all is well. Want to ask for a quick favor. If you have gained value through this podcast, I ask you, won't you take the time to think about subscribing to the podcast? You can do one or two ways. You can either click the link in the show notes to become a subscriber and supporter of the podcast, or you can go to anchor.fm/codinglife. It would mean the world to me. If you take the time to sponsor the podcast, be a supporter, be a subscriber. Definitely appreciate you all. And here we go.
Hello, devs. Welcome back for another episode of Coding Life. Man, I hope you guys have had a great day, fantastic week, prosperous month, and just a rewarding year. I got a special guest, Kyle Woon, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Marlon. How about yourself?
Doing sensational. Yeah, man. How's your day going over there, Kyle?
It's been good. I'm out here on the West Coast in the Bay Area. Super excited to be on the podcast. So just happy to dive in and share my story.
For sure, man. So Kyle, man, we met a few weeks ago. First of all, man, let the people know what's your position at your job and who do you work for?
Yeah, for sure. So currently I'm a software engineer at Twilio on our messaging team. So if you're not sure, if you're unaware of what Twilio is, it's a cloud communications company that allows you to integrate communications into your apps. So if you can think about your Lyft driver, whenever they call you or they send you a text message saying they're there, Lyft uses our API, and by our, I mean Twilio's API, to send those messages. And so I'm a software engineer at Twilio. I primarily work on the front end, so our messaging console. So I work on all the UI work that has to do with messaging. So if our customers want to see information about their account as it pertains to messaging, more often than not, I work on that. So that's what I do. And a couple of weeks ago, I met Marlon when I was in Atlanta. Twilio had an event called Twilio After Hours, where the goal is to get underrepresented minorities in the pipeline. And so I was able to chop it up with Marlon, and I heard about his podcast, and we made this happen.
For sure, man. And while we was there, you had like a little segment that you got to present something, man, to tell the people what that was.
Yeah. So a little over 3 months ago now, I created this web app called Drakestagram. So I'm a huge Drake fan. And I know one thing that I noticed that a lot of people, myself included, struggle with is creating a caption on Instagram. So And oftentimes people use a Drake lyric as their caption, or they'll just put asterisk insert Drake quote. And so I figured people were struggling, and I was like, I struggle myself. I'm like, how about I just create a caption generator where you can type in a keyword and that matches the vibe of your photo. So for example, say you're in front of a Lamborghini or something like that. You can type Lambo, and then what you type it into Drakestagram, and then what it will return to you is the list of Drake lyrics that say Lambo in it. And so this is a web app that anyone can access at www.drakestagram.com. And so while I was in Atlanta, what I did a live coding segment at this event to integrate Twilio with Drakestagram. So instead of having to go to the web app, what you could do is text this phone number, and then you would text it your keyword just as if you were to put it online. But instead you would text it, and then you'll get a Drake lyric back to your phone, directly to your phone. So that was a really cool, fun experience. It was fun live coding. It's a little nerve-wracking live coding, because you never know. You never know what exactly, you know, internet could cut out. But thankfully, all went well. And so it was an overall dope experience.
Yeah, no, it was super dope. Like, I was, because I don't know if I wasn't paying attention or whatever, but when you got up, I didn't know what you was about to, you know, present.
And,
you
yeah.
know, what you about to do. And so he got up, and then I seen, I think, was it Ruby? Were you coding Ruby?
I was doing JavaScript, Node.
Okay, the JavaScript. Okay. So you got up, and then the text editor opened. I was like, ah, you got my attention.
See, that's interesting, because some people were like, all right, you lost me there. But with you, you're like, you got my attention.
Right. Like, yeah, I was like, yeah. And so, yeah, it was, you know, it was super dope. And yeah, I did it. I think I typed in Atlanta for my keyword and everything. And I got like two lyrics back and everything. So yeah, it's super. Nice. We'll link that and everything to the show notes and everything. So, so you guys can try it out. So Kyle, man, let's take a step back. Number one, where you're from, yeah, where are you from?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Atlanta. I grew up with Decatur specifically. So I grew up there, went to school, like elementary, middle, and high school there. And then once I graduated from high school, I attended Georgia Tech, and which is like right down the street. So I really, like, I wanted to go out of state for school, and I was looking at a lot of HBCUs, North Carolina A&T, specifically, but North Carolina A&T wasn't giving me that money, and it was a great school too. And so Georgia, if you're a resident of the state of Georgia and you have, I believe it's like a 3.7 or higher and like a specific score on the SAT, you're eligible for this thing called Hope Scholarship in Georgia, and it will give you pretty much, it pays for most of your tuition. It doesn't include room and board, but most of your tuition if you go to an in-state school. So I'm like, Georgia Tech is an amazing school. It's in my backyard, and I can get the scholarship. So I went to Georgia Tech. So I graduated high school 2012, entered Tech fall 2012, and I was originally studying computer engineering because I was interested in, well, at least I thought I was always interested in, you know, devices. Like growing up, like when the iPod first came out, I want to say I was probably in like sixth grade when the iPod came out, and I was like, man, this is really cool. I want to learn more about how this works. And so once I got to school, though, I realized that I didn't really want to do computer engineering. I really wanted to do more software. And I had a friend that had an internship at Google after his freshman year. They have this engineering practicum program for freshmen and sophomores. And I was like, this is what I want to do. And so I knew then. So I switched my major. And I had this, and it was really silly of me at the time. I was contemplating whether or not I should switch, because I wasn't really liking the curriculum with computer engineering, because it was very electrical engineering oriented. So I had to take classes like digital signal processing. And so I was debating like whether or not to switch, because I was like, I won't be a quote unquote engineer anymore, because I won't be a computer engineer. But then I realized titles don't really matter. And I was like, this is actually what I want to do. So I ended up switching to computer science, and honestly, one of the best decisions that I made. And so like while I was at Tech, I had a couple internships. My first one was at General Electric in Salem, Virginia. So it's like Southwestern Virginia. This is like the first internship I could get. And I understand like it's difficult to get that first position because it's like you have to have experience to get the job. But, you know, to get a job, you need experience. So you have that whole paradigm, right? So I was like, I'll honestly take anything I can get. And while I was there, it was a cool experience. I made great relationships there. I kind of was tucked away on an intern project, and I didn't really like it. It wasn't like actually working on what the other engineers were working on. And so I vowed to myself after that internship, my next internship is going to be in the Bay Area. I'm like, it's like the epicenter of technology. I mean, Atlanta's coming up heavy right now, but I was
big
like,
facts. Big facts.
Yeah, Atlanta's big coming facts. Up heavy. So I can't even lie on that. But I was like, I want to be in the Bay. And so during my, so every September, Georgia Tech has a career fair where they bring all these companies to recruit students for internships and full-time positions. And so this is right after my junior year of college. And so all the big companies like Microsoft, Google, Facebook, all these companies you can think of were there. Twilio was also there. And I had spoken to all these companies in the past, and a lot of the recruiters I actually knew just from like seeing them around on campus every time they come, because I would always go to those sessions. But with the big companies, they usually have these super long lines. And then whenever you get up to the front of the line, they're just like, all right, apply online. And I'm just like, wow, so I really wasted my time. So I was like, this time I'm going to do a different strategy. I want to talk to smaller companies. I was learning like what startups were, and I'm like, it would be cool to work for a startup. And so I saw Twilio was there. And granted, Twilio wasn't a startup at the time. It was pre-IPO, so they hadn't gone public yet. This was in September 2014 when I first saw Twilio. So I went to the line. I didn't really know what Twilio was. I just went online on my phone while I was in line just to see what they do so I could have conversation. And so I spoke to one of the engineers there, and he was asking me about my side projects. And for me, I was very involved in school with like different extracurricular activities like National Society of Black Engineers and other like organizations. So I had like leadership roles. And so I really didn't have time to work on side projects. And granted, I had just switched to computer science as well. And I was able to finesse my way out of that question by saying, it's not that I don't want to have personal projects. It's just that I don't have the time with all the other things that I'm, you know, all the leadership roles that I'm balancing. And the guy thought I was different. And so he gave me an interview, and then I was able to crush the interview, got the job. And so after that, I made a note to self that personal projects are very important for the resume, because it differentiates yourself, especially if everyone has like school projects on their resume. And that's just coming from like the university perspective. I know there are also listeners that are coming from like, you know, self-taught backgrounds. But yeah, I found that those personal projects really make a difference, and it shows like initiative, it shows that you know what you're doing, and personally you just learn a lot by working on a personal project.
Trust me, I'm building one right now, and I was pissed off earlier today, so yeah.
Yeah, it definitely, you definitely learn a lot about yourself, and you grow too,
right? I was having some issues with Node.js. It was really, really pissing me off. Anyway. No, man, dope. So so like as of now, how long have you been at Twilio?
So full-time. So I did two internships at Twilio. So I did that one in summer 2015 and then summer 2016, and I graduated Georgia Tech in December 2016. So I did 4.5 years of college, and then after I graduated, I went back to Twilio full-time in February 2017. So I've been there a little over 2 years now full-time.
Dope. So did you have to like reapply, or was it kind of like, how'd you get back to Twilio?
No, for sure. Yeah. So after the first summer, generally what happens after the internship, your manager and like the university recruiter, they kind of like do evaluation, talk about, you know, how your performance was during the internship. And then they decide whether or not they want to offer you back for another summer. That's if you're not graduating. If you are graduating, they talk about a full-time offer. So I got the offer to come back the next summer. And I was thinking about maybe I should check out other internships, but Georgia Tech had the study abroad program that I really wanted to do. And it was during the summer though, the next summer, and it was in Spain. And I was like, man, I really want to do this. So I kind of like communicated it to my manager and and the university recruiter, who I have a great relationship with to this day. She's not at the company anymore, but I have a great relationship. And I let them know, like, I really wanted to do this. I really want to come back and intern another summer, but I also want to do this study abroad program, which is after 6 weeks into the internship, and they were flexible and able to make it happen. And so that's kind of like when I knew, like, you know, Twilio was a company for me, because like they were able to be flexible, and I know no other company would have let me do that. I mean, granted, they knew who I was, and I was able to build a great relationship, but I knew no other company would let me do that. So I came back the next summer for just a 6 week internship. Generally most are 12 weeks. But yeah, so I did the 6 week internship and studied abroad. But after that internship, they offered me a full-time role. And I still interviewed and had offers with other companies, other like big companies, one like Apple. But I knew that Twilio, like I really liked the work culture that they had there and just the people all around. And like Apple's an amazing company, but I knew for me that I could best learn and grow at Twilio. So I took my talents there after I graduated and been there ever since.
So what was it? Let me ask you this: how did you know? Well, how did you get the hunch that you could grow more at Twilio versus Apple?
Yeah. So with Twilio, they have this small teams model, and so it's to have a team with no more than 8 people. And so with this small teams model, it allows you to move faster, but it also allows each engineer to have high impact. And so. And I'm not really sure the team structure at Apple, but I knew like from experience with me, like actually at Twilio working on the team, like I was exposed to a lot of new technologies. And as you can just see, cause like Twilio was a growing company too. So when I joined like during the internship, it was like kind of like in this hyper growth stage, like we were growing rapidly. So I was able to see like, you know, problems at scale, right? You know, how do we scale these systems to get high availability so that we don't go down, because we have a lot of like major customers relying on us. So if we go down, like that like interferes with their business. So I was able to see like firsthand that how all that stuff works. So it was just really cool. And so they have that small teams model. I really liked that. And then I just really liked also that like our CEO, Jeff, he like, I know like Tim Cook at Apple does the same thing, but like how Jeff like stands up for different issues, whether it's like, you know, racial discrimination that happens in the world. Like he'll write a blog post, you know, just telling his thoughts. It's like he has an opinion and a morally sound opinion. So that really helped also. I'm like, you know, I'm going to a company, not only that is like a great company tech wise, but it's also like morally and ethically sound in alignment with my values.
Yeah, I think that's big. I think that's really big. I really think some companies are kind of really miss the ball, like really saying what their values are or where they're staying. And a lot of times companies are just silent, you know, which you can be just as equally a part of the problem.
Right, exactly. You
know, if you're silent on whatever the issue and stuff be. And so, of course, like, you know, once you take sides on a certain topic, there's going to be another side like, oh, that's messed up. I don't agree with that. But at least you chose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, at least you chose. And then once you choose, then you attract the people that agree with that. And exactly. Instead of like, you know, trying to stand in the middle and trying to attract everybody. Yeah, that doesn't work out.
Yep, exactly.
You know, it doesn't work out. I was about to say a company's name, but we'll move on. Okay. Yeah, man. So kind of taking a step back again. So you first started writing code in college, or was you doing this like in high school as well?
Good question. Yeah. So for me, like growing up, I didn't really know what engineering was, coding was. And so my parents, I would say they didn't either, but they knew what they had heard of engineering through like either their colleagues at work or something like, or like other people. They just heard it around and they knew, you know, they made good money. So I would say I came from like a lower middle class family. And like, you know, my parents want the best for me. So what they would do is they would look up different summer programs that were like, you know, engineering related for like, you know, underrepresented minorities. And so one summer I did a program at Spelman, and it was like a robotics thing. It was a robotics program. I was in like 8th grade at the time. So that was a really cool experience. That it was like a week long program. We did stuff of, it was more so hardware though. We did a little bit of software, but it was more so hardware related. And I thought that was really cool. It was just like exposing me, you know, cause it's like you can't be what you can't see. So I was able to get that exposure early on. And then after that, there was this program called Summer Engineering Institute that my mom found at Georgia Tech. And with this program, it's a 4-week residential program. So the students are on campus. And this is after my 11th grade year. This is after my 11th grade year. And so I did this program, it was a 4-week residential program. And they also expose you to like just generally engineering. So you learn about like chemical engineering, electrical engineering. And then we also did a little bit of coding. And I realized, you know, I like the coding stuff and I wanted to do more of the computer science stuff. In high school, I would go online, like on YouTube, there was this guy named The New Boston, and he would like teach coding, and I would like kind of follow along with him. It wasn't anything serious. Like, I didn't build anything serious. So I dabbled a little bit, but not much. It wasn't really until college that I actually started writing code. So I guess you could say I've been writing code for about 7 years, on and off for about 7 years now. As you can imagine, I've written the most code in my life in the past like 2 to 3 years. But I would say, yeah, I just really like I started learning for real during like college, like professionally.
With you in college and everything, especially too, you got a bunch of other responsibilities, like you said, leadership and other classes and everything. Just from the general coding aspect, what are some things that you struggle with? Like, do you struggle with the syntax? Did you struggle with like learning a concept? With things like, I don't know, like you know, MVC. Like, what are some things that you struggle with when you first
started? Good question. So when I started off as computer engineering, the curriculum at Georgia Tech was that every computer engineer had to take MATLAB, and so MATLAB is a programming language that a lot of the other engineering disciplines use. They use it for modeling. Say you want to do modeling and simulation, but I don't know why computer engineers had to take it. And like they always made the class really difficult, but like I always found enjoyment and like fulfillment every time I was able to like solve the homeworks. So the homeworks are really challenging, and they try to use like everyday like examples. They would try to use like sports and stuff, like, you know, calculate the average of like, you know, points per game or something like that, right? And right. So I would do that, and I think it wasn't more so the syntax that that caught me up. It was more so the problem solving. And like even today, when people ask me like, is coding hard? I'm like, I have a very interesting perspective on that. What I generally say is coding is not hard. It's more so problem solving. I think anyone can learn the syntax, but the code, the syntax is a means to an end. It's a means to solving a problem, because you're not coding just to code. You're coding to, you know, build something or to solve a problem. So after I switched to computer science, I took Java, and I was really happy to be learning Java, because I remember when I was doing MATLAB, people that were in the computer science world were like, nobody ever uses MATLAB. And so I started learning Java. That was a great experience. Well, I took the class in school. It was a great experience. I learned a lot. And then it wasn't until, well, actually, when I was super excited to learn Java. And like what I would do is I would look at the like lecture notes. They would post them ahead of time. So I would always go over them to make sure I was familiar. I never did that with any other class, but I did it for Java because I was like, I know this is going to be useful in the long run. And so that really gave me an edge in the course, because it was like, you know, what's up?
This history class is terrible.
Exactly. I was super excited to be learning Java. And so I would like look at the lecture notes ahead of time. I would like kind of do some practice or just try to like make sure I understood, you know, the different concepts. I'm like, oh, we're talking about inheritance today. And I had heard of this stuff because I had like, classmates that were good friends of mine that were already that started off as computer science. So I also had a head start, so to speak. Like my roommate, Xavier, he was studying computer science and I was computer engineering. So we would like kind of compare the curriculum. So I kind of knew what I was getting into. And like when I was learning this stuff, I'm like, this is really cool. And then when I took the data structures course, so that was like the next course after the intro to programming in Java, I already knew the Java syntax. And this is where we talk about the, like pretty much any technical coding interview you have right, like that anyone has today, that you're going to have questions about around data structures and algorithms. And so this is like the foundation for like interviewing. And with this, it was more so, and I wouldn't even say syntax either. It was more so problem solving, just understanding the concepts. Cause I find that it's like kind of like math. It's like when you're learning math, you have to, each concept builds on top of the other. So you have to have that solid foundation in order to actually learn and like apply new concepts. And so that's pretty much how I apply with coding. The syntax isn't too difficult. It's like the more you do it, the more, well, at least personally for me, the more I do it, the more I become familiar with it and I feel more comfortable. But it's just, for me, I just see the code and the syntax and all of that as a means to solving the problem.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I've always, like, my thing is when people ask this coding stuff is hard, I have like a different perspective too, where I would say there's two elements of, you know, learning how to code. You know, there's the mental aspect and then there's the actual learning the syntax. And so, you know, I believe anybody can learn any syntax in the, you know, in like in a year, you know, yep. sometimes less. But believing that you can do this when you're getting socked in the face by this, you know, problem, whatever, you know, believing that you can do it when possibly you've been told your whole life by, I don't know, your family that you can't do something, that's a lot harder.
It is, yeah.
And so, yeah, I've always told people, like, it's the mental. Yeah, because it's like, you're going to suck.
Like, yeah, oh, definitely, yeah.
For a while. Like, I feel like I still suck at a lot of things. Everything. Yeah. So you're going to suck for a while. So, you know, are you okay with sucking when you're been, you know, you might have been a straight A student like all your life. Like, you know, coding doesn't care anything about that.
It does. Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah. And yeah, it's definitely those mental roadblocks. Cause like with me, when I first started out, like I wasn't the best, you know, code always has errors. Even today, my code has errors like on the first try. Like nothing ever works on the first try when coding. And that's just a part of the game, you know. It's like, you know, you fail fast. Learning how to fail fast, I find, is so important in any skill, whether it be coding or any other thing that we pursue. I find that failing fast, but being able to get up just as fast and learn from that, like, previous quote-unquote failure allows you to move a lot faster. And so I definitely embrace that in my coding journey. I've been rejected from so many, like, tech companies for, like, interviews, like, when I was interviewing and stuff like that. And so I just use each one to like to make me like learn from each of those experiences to make me better. Because before I got that GE internship, I had interviewed at like different companies, like one being like Qualcomm, and like I would get rejected. And I used that fuel of rejection. I was like, all right, I'm going to actually learn this stuff, and I'm going to apply it, and I'm going to make sure like they can't reject me anymore. You know, I'm going to be the best, right? And so I used that fuel to like actually secure that internship at Twilio, because I was like, you know, I'm tired of getting rejected. It doesn't feel good to be rejected from jobs, especially when you know on the job you can learn anything. And even today, I still don't feel like technical interviews or the way that they do them today are still a fair assessment. Yeah, fair or efficient assessment of your skills. But I guess it's just one of those tools that they have in place to kind of like easily weed people out. But like I have this philosophy that you can be a great interviewer and read the cracking the coding interview book and just happen to get like an easy question and you get the job. But then you can be an amazing programmer but not so good at interviewing, and then you don't get the job. So it's kind of like learning the game, learning the system.
Correct. Yeah, big fact. I think was it? It was one company. They do like their standard interviews, like just kind of get to know you, and then, you know, they just send you like a take home coding test.
Oh yeah, I've seen those before.
Yeah, and then once you complete that, if you move forward, I think you get like a live 30-minute to an hour, you know, coding test, which that feels like a lot of pressure too. Like, yeah. you know, you just said, like, you know, when you was coding and stuff on the stage doing live coding, like, something always, you know,
goes exactly. You it's know, like you're being like, evaluated. It's like someone, like you're in a zoo and people are like looking, you know.
Right. Like, And it's like you said earlier, like something's always going to go wrong. I'm more surprised when something works on a first try. I'm like, okay, yeah, something's definitely wrong.
Exactly, yeah. I'm super skeptical.
Something's wrong. This entire site is going to crash any second now.
Exactly. I'm like, it can't be true. It can't be, right?
All right. And so it's like, yeah, okay, something's not right. If they work on the first try, I'm going to play the lotto today.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool. So like, talk about what's your day in the life, you know, at Twilio. You know, what's the things you usually do on a day in, day out?
Yeah, so pretty much the way it works is we work in sprints. So what a sprint is, for those of you that may not know, is a 2-week time period, and each company or each team sprints may be different. I know there's some teams actually at Twilio that have 1-week sprints. But pretty much what a sprint is the amount of time to complete a number of tasks. So at the beginning of those 2 weeks for my team, what we do is we have what's called sprint planning. And so we're planning the sprint. So all the engineers are there, and the product manager and the engineering manager. And we look at our sprint. We look at all the things that we want to accomplish in these next 2 weeks. And usually the product manager broke them down into tasks that each engineer can pick up. And so what we do is we talk about resourcing. So like, how many people are going to be in the sprint? We have unlimited PTO at Twilio. So it's always good to do resourcing, because like, say a lot of people are on PTO, you have to, you know, take that into account for the sprint. But generally people don't abuse the PTO. So that's really good. But yeah, so we do resourcing, and then what we do is we go and look at each task that we have to do. So say, for example, it's like, you know, create this new endpoint for this API. What we'll do as a team, we'll count down. We'll do like 3, 2, 1. And then at 1, what we do is we'll actually estimate how many points we think that task is going to be. And so there's different philosophies. I know there's like in agile development, people say you should do it as in like the point should be whether or not something is like how difficult something is, right? That's how you should point it. Right. But the reason you want to do agile development is kind of so you can like over each sprint track the team's velocity, see like how many points they can do. And so what we did, which may not be like, you know, completely 100% agile, we tried to map tasks to days, so to person days. So how many person days do you think this will take, just for better predictability? I know at one point in time, we were terrible at estimating. We would say, okay, this will be, we're going to say this is a 3, but it'll end up taking like a whole work week. It'll end up taking 5 days. So we tried to start tracking it to days. So we do the sprint planning, and after that, the sprint starts. We generally try to make it fun. So we'll give the sprint a name. It'll usually be a theme. So say we're doing food. So we're like, all right, today ours is going to be hot wings or something like that. And so what we do at the beginning of the sprint, after the sprint's begun, each engineer picks up a ticket on the sprint. And generally everyone kind of is working on their own part of things. So it's like, it's kind of understood, like this is what you're going to be working on. So we'll pick up our tasks, and what we will do is we start coding them. So, for me, when I'm coding, I like to listen to music. It's really difficult to listen to hip hop while coding because it's just very distracting. So, I started listening to like some, not meditation music, but it's like one of those like study beats, playlists on Spotify, and, I'll start coding. And then like in the evening, so we have lunch at work Monday, Thursday, every other Friday. So it's very interesting schedule is Monday, Thursday, every other Friday. And so what we, after lunch, I'll generally get back to working, but I'm a little more distracted after work. So I'll like, while I'm coding, I'll like turn on like a Breakfast Club interview with like, you know, Charlamagne, like see what they're talking about, like if they have a celebrity on.
Charlamagne gonna have you rolling, boy. He's
exactly.
So funny.
Exactly, and I'm laughing at work, and people are probably looking at me too, but I'm like, I'll get my stuff done, so that doesn't matter. And so I'll just pretty much be working on my task, and then once the task is complete, what we do is we submit what's called a pull request. And so we submit this pull request using Git. We use GitHub, so we submit that pull request, and what we do from there is one of my teammates has to review my code. And so this is equivalent or at least what I think, is equivalent to the teacher, your English teacher, marking up your paper with red ink. So they're picking apart literally everything that's that may not work properly or that's done like inefficiently, and they're like, you know, saying what can be done better. It's generally constructive criticism though, and it's good because honestly, that's how I've become a better engineer, through code reviews, because more experienced engineers are able to look at my code and they're able to like point things out to me that I wouldn't have, that otherwise I wouldn't have known. So what they do is they'll look at my code, they'll review it. If there's some things that I need to address, I will address those, and then I'll like resubmit my code in the pull request. Otherwise, if it looks good, they'll give me a thumbs up on the pull request, they'll approve the pull request, and then what we do is merge it to our master code base. And then from there, what we do is we do like the typical build and release, and then we're able to deploy that new version of our service. So that's pretty much the day in the life. And when it comes to like team-wise, the team is amazing. Like I'm able to, like we try to do like different like bonding activities. So I know last year I went to like Lake Tahoe for the first, well, I had been to Lake Tahoe before, but I had never snowboarded before. I don't know, people typically that I know growing up from Atlanta had never snowboarded. So, but
ever in life.
So it was a cultural immersion to say the least. And right. So we went to Tahoe. That was a really cool experience. I snowboarded. I mean, I fell a lot. I was really sore afterwards, but like I learned, like if I didn't go this year. So if I were to go back, I know I'd be really rusty, but it was just a great experience. And so we try to like keep that team morale, because it's always like good to work with people like that you like. I just feel like having a happy team culture, it increases productivity. And then like also my team's like very forward thinking. So in terms of like diversity, right? So I'm the only like so my team is actually pretty diverse. So it's majority women. I'm the only Black person on the team, but I know we're thinking about ways, like we're like, how can we get people to like apply to Twilio? Because I personally don't buy the whole pipeline problem that there's not enough engineers out there. It's just that your company may not be, you know, quote unquote sexy enough, right? So we're like, how do we attract more diverse people to the company and the team? And so like we had like kind of like just as a team, we're brainstorming like what kind of events we can do to actually like increase that pipeline out of people coming into Twilio that are coming from underrepresented backgrounds. So I have a, like, and everyone chips in. It's not like it's like my sole burden as the Black person to to fix things, right? So that's really nice. So yeah, overall,
You need more, you know, people of color. You need more women.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, all of it. And so, yeah, I have about 607, 608, 9 ideas for that.
Yeah.
You know, just, yeah, it's funny because that's like a lot of my work and stuff has been, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how to, you know, get more people and stuff, and number one, involved into tech, you know, and learning coding and stuff like that, and, you know, helping individual stuff get into certain companies and stuff like that. But yeah, it's not, you're right, it's not a pipeline stuff issue. Okay, you know what's crazy? So you just mentioned something. You say you're trying to get more people, you know, applying to Twilio. Do you feel like there's not enough people applying? You feel like it's a shortage? What are you thinking there?
So I don't think there's definitely people applying, but it's just like, you know, who's applying, right? And generally what people find is that, you know, a lot of people that come into any company is through referrals. And so if your company is comprised of majority white males, right? Then people are generally going to refer people that look like them. So I don't think it's like that people aren't applying. It's just like, you know, if there's not that many people to begin with in a company, it may be difficult to get those referrals. So like for me, like I refer like the people in my network. I'm like, okay, hey. And I've been able to get a few people in into the pipeline. And so I would say it's not difficult to do. It's just you have to be strategic about it.
Yeah, so I feel like it's kind of, and I'm gonna tell you why in a minute, but I feel like it's kind of both. I feel like there is enough people out here, but I also feel like for the amount of developers needed, there's definitely a shortage. And so I feel like there's enough either underpaid or unemployed developers that can really close the gap, you know, in a lot of these companies. It's like that. And so, but also overall, I still think it's a story shortage. So the reason I say that too, because a buddy of mine, he's going through his interview process with Google. He's an engineer. And so the guy kind of slipped up and told him, he was like, yeah, man, we really, really like you. We really need you because we're struggling to find developers.
Yeah.
That's at Google.
Wow. That's crazy.
You know, so it's really interesting, but I do think, and another thing too, like, I will say this too, like, everybody doesn't want to go and like live to the Bay, you know, everything where rent is like $1.2 million a month, you know?
I know, right? Yeah. The rent, that's real, man. That's so real. And I'm just like, wow. Like the fact that Atlanta's like coming up right now, I'm just like, man, might have to make a move back, you know, to the hometown.
Does Twilio have an Atlanta office?
We do, in fact, have an Atlanta office. So right now, our Atlanta office is located in Buckhead, and it's primarily sales. But I know, I'm sure one day they're going to expand it to be like engineering, all-encompassing. And then also you can be a remote employee too. So there's also that. So,
okay. So, I mean, you said something interesting there too, as far as, you know, trying to get more people and stuff in the pipeline. I know you're trying to do your own individual effort. I know you have a course that you're introducing. Talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. So I have this course called Idea to App Store. And so what the goal of it is for people to be able to have an app idea. So like people hit me up all the time. They're like, hey, Kyle, I have an app idea. Like, you know, how do I build an app? I don't have any technical experience. So the goal of this is for people to go from an app to the app store, hence Idea to App Store. And so through this is for people that don't, that have some experience with coding. It ranges from those people to people that don't have any experience at all. And I teach them step by step using this five-step process that I created. And so the first is market research. So essentially knowing your customer. So what I have my students do, I have them do, you know, customer interviews, like seeing who their ideal customer is first. Because like, if you don't have an ideal customer, it's like who's going to be using your app? So we do that. So they do customer interviews as well as identifying the features for their minimum viable product. And what a minimum viable product, also known as an MVP, is just the core features that are going to be in your app. So without all the bells and whistles. So if you think about Instagram 10 years ago, it didn't have like stories and all this stuff. I don't even think it had DM back then. It was just literally sharing photos because that's the problem or what they were trying to do.
No filters.
Yeah. Exactly. And so so that's
what would the world be without filters?
Exactly, right? Exactly. And so it's crazy. So like, but they had that MVP and they were able to test it. And then they said, okay, people want filters, people want to slide in the DMs, and so they created these other features. So that's one thing I teach my students. That's the first step. Then the second step is the design. So I teach them how to actually build wireframes for their app. So design is actually not my expertise, but I have a really good friend, Ali Wu, who's located in the Bay Area, and she's a designer. And so I had her come in to teach my course on design, and all this is virtual, by the way. But she was able to create videos for me on how to design your app, because design is very important, especially when it comes to, I'm sure you know, Marlon, I know you were just mentioning about, you know, your endeavors and like how design is very important in that regard. So
facts, it'd be little stuff too. And like,
yeah,
especially like with UX and everything. Watch this. I just heard a story. I think I was reading something. I don't remember, a podcast, whatever, anything. But I heard a story about Best Buy, how at one point Best Buy, and this is UX, but Best Buy customers was like putting everything in their cart, in their cart, and just leaving the site. So throughout 1 year or a certain amount of time, it had basically the loss of money they had with the people not checking out.
Yeah.
$31 million.
Wow.
And so one guy literally just said he think it's because we're forcing them to make an account.
Uh-huh.
And he said, how about we just add guest checkout?
Yeah.
And it literally kind of like opened that floodgate. You know, that's mostly
because like
everything, but yeah.
Yeah, when you have those barriers, yeah, like people don't want to do that. Yeah. So UX is very important. And so the third thing, so that's the second thing, design. Then the third thing I teach them is creating their data model. So identifying all their data sources for their app. So whether it's going to be coming from external APIs, right? Whether that's the case or whether or not it's going to be user-generated data. So that is, that's pretty much like, oh, and then also we create like data models. So like an entity relationship diagram. Like pretty much how the database is going to be structured, like where all the data is going to be located, and like how it's like we do all the technical stuff, but I teach them all that step by step.
I need to take this course.
Yeah, because like it's very important, especially if you're going to have like a big application that you want to scale. Like being able to retrieve that information and do it like really quickly is important. So doing the data model. So I'm putting that computer science degree to work there. And then the fourth thing is implementation. So this is the I would say the most difficult thing to teach, because this is where we actually start coding. And so I teach them the basics of JavaScript, because I'm using React Native, which is a JavaScript framework that allows you to build native iOS and Android apps. So but in order to do React Native, you have to know the basics of JavaScript. And so I teach them using the REPL, R-E-P-L, stands for like read, evaluate, print, loop. And that's where it's like a console on, like, there's different websites. And I just show them, like, the different things you can do with JavaScript, you know, the data type, like, what are the data types in JavaScript? You have, like, numbers, strings, arrays, et cetera. And then, so I teach them the basis of JavaScript. And then after we get the foundation, this is where we actually start learning React. So learning the React Native framework. And so this is by far the biggest part of the course, as it's, like, implementation. Everything we did before that is very important and it's a solid foundation, but the coding part is like, you know, this is the make or break, and it's those mental blocks that, you know, get people. And I actually had a student hit me up the other day, and he was like, yo, like, I appreciate you so much, because now I really feel like I can do this. It's like, you know, after going through like the data modeling stuff, and now we got to the code, we hadn't even started the code yet, but you know, he switches perspective. He knows he can do this now. So it's like those mental blockers. It's like the whole mindset is so important. So the implementation part is the next part. And then the last part of it is submitting to the App Store. The Google Play Store is pretty easy to submit to. Google.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that can be a pain in the ass. Oh,
it can be. Yeah. And like the Google Play Store is generally pretty easy to like get stuff on, but the Apple App Store is so hard. Like I was working on an app. I was working on a Greek app called Kemet, so it connects people in Black Greek organizations. It's a social networking app, and I had submitted it at least 4 times before it got accepted. Like Apple kept rejecting it. One was like, you need your terms of service. I'm like, all right, I need to do that. Even though nobody reads it. Of course you need that for legal purposes. And then the next time they're like, this is a social network. People need to be able to block each other. They need to be able to like report things. What else did Apple say?
Yeah, I got that one too. I got the fact they got to report things. That's,
exactly.
Yeah.
And then I was using location. So they were like, you can't automatically use location. It has to be opt-in. And even if they opt in, they have to opt in every time they open the app. So it's not like you can check in and then be checked in forever. So I had to fix a lot of those bugs, or not even really bugs. It's more so just compliance to Apple.
Yeah. So my head is spinning right now.
Yeah, it's triggered. And so those are like, those are the steps that I'm teaching in this course. And so it's all online. There are videos that, so there's the videos that my students go through. And then also every week, every Wednesday, we have a Zoom call at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And that's where we are actually going over the prior week's like lecture. That's like the opportunity for like anyone to ask questions. And so we just learning and growing together. And like yesterday we had our first like coding session. I'm like, you know, every one of you is a coder now, whether you believe it or not. So instilling that confidence, I find, is essential to teaching.
Yeah, for sure. Because I remember I, in my early, and I feel like I'm still early in the process, with my early days, and then I went to a boot camp, and man, like, I don't think I got a lot of that. I don't think I got a lot of that. Like, I mean, granted, the boot camp was like 2-3 months too, you know, so yeah. I don't believe, I don't care what they say, you're not about to be a full-out developer coming out 2-3 months.
Yeah, exactly. But it's definitely something you have to practice, and it takes time, like just like with anything. And like we all started somewhere, you know, like Rome wasn't built in a day, neither were my coding skills.
Yeah, the first app I always tell, this is so funny. The first app I worked on, I designed the screens in Microsoft Paint.
Oh wow. Wow, Microsoft Paint.
Yeah, I didn't know any better.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just so funny. It's just like I met a guy from Google. He's like, he said, okay, this is interesting. He said, but what did you design the app in? I was like, Microsoft Paint. He's like, yeah, don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of tools out there now.
All right. This is a while ago. This was like 2012, 13. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so I don't think Sketch was out then.
Oh, really? Wow.
So it was just Photoshop. He told me to go learn Photoshop.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people do use their designs. They use Photoshop. And now Adobe has this really cool software called Adobe XD. So I think it's a competitor to Sketch. But with Sketch, you have to pay for it. It's like you get the 14-day free trial. Then you have to pay $98 for it. But then Adobe XD is completely free. And it's like it allows you to do this stuff. So that's really cool if anyone's out there that wants to, you know, dabble with design. And they also have like a lot of tutorials online on YouTube, and Adobe also has their own tutorial, so that's definitely a resource to look into.
So what's your course? Is it like a rolling case, or is it like kind of like a semester based? Like how's your course set up?
Yeah, so my course right now, it's on a, right now is a course, and so it's how it works, it's closed enrollment. So it's like we have this first cohort, and this is my first cohort doing this. So we're going through the course right now, and then after that I'm going to open it up to be an open enrollment. So right now I'm, you know, making sure, like I'm seeing what works, what doesn't work, right? And then I'm going to adjust from there. But after that I'm going to do open enrollment, and if you're interested in learning more about the program, you can go to idea and then the number 2 app app.io. So I'm going to spell it out. It's IDEA, the number 2 app, so app.io. And so that's how you can learn more about the course. And I have a form there that you can fill out talking about your app and, you know, why you're interested in building an app. And so once you fill that form out, I'll be in contact with you, and we can chat more about if the program is a fit for you.
Sweet. Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes too. So Kyle, man, let the people know, man, where can they find you? How can they get in contact with you? You know, maybe they want to give you a shout out on Twitter. I don't know. Where they can find you.
For sure. Yeah. So on my social media, so Instagram and Twitter, my handle is Kyleculus. So it's like calculus, but Kyleculus. So that's KyleCulus. I made it in high school, and I never changed it. And I'm like, it's just who I am now. Right. People, I always see people in real life and they call me calculus in real life. So I just go with it. So that's where you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. Yeah. And like, it's my whole mission here is just to, you know, create dope technology for the culture. Definitely think that we can move the culture forward through technology.
For sure. For sure, man. Yeah, Kyle, man, definitely appreciate you coming on, man. It was definitely great hearing about your story, you know, great hearing about Twilio. You know, great hearing, you know, about your course and, you know, everything that comes with it, man. So yeah, guys, if you don't follow me, I don't know what your problem is. Anyway, if you don't follow me, I'm on Instagram mostly, Marlon.Avery. On Twitter as well. Marlon_Avery. We got Cole Podcast on Instagram. And we got Cole_Podcast on Twitter. So I got a little surprise for everybody. I'm gonna make an introduction. I got a new service coming out, and you know, you guys have been rocking with me, I don't know, a couple months now, and so I'm gonna give you guys access to a new service coming out. I'll make an introduction of it, everything, once it's ready. It's almost ready. But yeah, I got a little surprise for everything coming. So yeah, Kyle, man, I'm gonna allow you, man, get a closing remarks, give some people positive to think about. Maybe they're struggling, maybe they don't know where to go. You know, maybe they're ready to put a hole in their computer like I was about to do.
That's funny. Yeah. Yo, Marlon, first, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on the podcast. Super excited and like happy I was able to share my story. For those of you out there that are listening, that are on your journey, learning how to code, you know, first, whether you're, you know, experienced engineer or you're just getting started, I want you to just, you know, keep pushing. As I mentioned earlier, the key is to fail fast. And then, you know, once you fail fast, learning from those mistakes, like nothing's ever going to work on the first try. And when it does, be skeptical. So I'm really excited. If you have any questions, feel free to DM me on my Instagram and Twitter. I know it's going to be in the show notes. But yeah, feel free to DM me. I'm happy to help any way I can. Just to help you grow on this journey. But yeah, again, Marlon, thanks so much. And y'all, Marlon's about to drop some heat. I'm super excited about his new project that he's about to release. So, y'all stay tuned.
For sure. You know, so hopefully my computer will make it through this phase too. Before I get out the window. Nah. All right. So, all right. Appreciate you guys. And we are out.